the doctor, again, this was so beautiful. And he said, if you choose to continue the pregnancy, here's what we will do. If you choose to terminate, here's what we will do. And that's it. It's a choice either way. And you should know the information and you should be able to make a choice either way. You should always be walking into it with as much information as you can, whether you choose to continue or terminate.
Our TFMR stories, pregnancy loss support in the heartbreak of terminating a wanted pregnancy.
Welcome to our next episode of our TFMR stories. Today we have Robin Imholt with us, and she has come on to share her story about her baby Ellie, who had a giant emphyseal, and the process of going through a TFMR pregnancy loss and trying to conceive after. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey with us, Robin.
Yeah, thanks for having a space for us to do that. It's really, really important.
I like to start these interviews by asking to tell us about a happy memory from your pregnancy that you lost. Because sometimes we can get so, well, the ending, you know, it's very tragic, right? So we get all wrapped up in the tragedy of the ending, but there's also so much love. There's also, you know, so much hope. And I'd love to hear what your favorite memory is of your pregnancy with Ellie.
Yeah, there's so many, which is really beautiful to be able to look back. I loved being pregnant. It was my very first pregnancy. I knew my whole life I wanted to be a mom. And my mom had really loved being pregnant, and my sister had as well. So I just knew, like, being pregnant was going to go well for me. So I was so excited about it. We'd been trying for a few months, felt like it took forever, but it was, you know, just a few months. And we were actually visiting family for the extended Christmas holiday. So it was January, but we'd actually like moved up there for 2 months for weather related reasons at home. And we were visiting them, and I found out in the bathroom at my sister's house, and I went running back in and told my husband right away. And then I told my sister right away. Like, there was none of this, like, we're going to wait until however many weeks. I can't keep a secret to save my life. So I was so excited. My parents were there too, and I really wanted to tell them. And my sister happens to be a medical clinician. So we immediately went in, did an ultrasound, and she was like, look, I think you're super early. Like, I can't really see much, but I can tell that there's some fluid in there. So, like, it looks like you're about to be pregnant. So what we did to tell my parents in, like, more than just a, like, hey, guess what kind of way, because I want to tell people right away, but I also like exciting ways to tell people. We taught my then, gosh, I think he had just turned two-year-old nephew how to say the word cousin. And we made a little card that said, guess what? And you open it, there's a picture of the ultrasound. It says, I'm getting a cousin. And we had him, like, run that over to my mom and dad and just say cousin and then run away. And it was like, we practiced it. He did so well. And in the actual moment, he, like, ran over and, like, blah, 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 and ran away. And they were like, what did he say? Wait, what's that? Come over here and tell us. And it's like, no, just open the card. It'll all make sense. It's fine. But it was so, it was like such a cute idea. And, you know, looking back, it was so fun. It's also that naivete of, like, I am 3 weeks pregnant and I'm teaching my nephew that he's going to have a cousin, that it's going to totally result in this perfect, there's a human coming out at the end of this, right? Like, just that, like, oh, those two lines mean exactly what everybody hopes and dreams that they do, when in reality, they don't so much of the time. But I can look back at that with, like, it's just such a, like, cute and fun. And he was so excited. And of course, has no idea what a cousin means at 2 years old, right? Like, he doesn't know what he's saying.
Oh, that's cute. And that is his first cousin.
That would have been his first cousin.
The first cousin experience on that side of the family.
Exactly. So he was the first grandbaby. That would have been the second one. So yeah, his first cousin. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, the innocence. We can look back on it and we can judge ourselves harshly, or we can say, that really is a beautiful memory.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do look at it as a beautiful memory, but it is kind of, it's interesting to see how it's also indicative of that, like, oh, everything's perfect and wonderful and it's all going to be totally fine without, you know, that's generally the world, the space that I like to live in. And
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. And then at some point there was a diagnosis, something went wrong.
Yeah, we found out we were pregnant in January. Everything was going really, really beautifully right up until the 20-week scan. And this is back in 2021. So COVID lockdown rules applied. My husband was not at any of our prenatal appointments right up until the ultrasound, that 20-week ultrasound he was able to be there for. They had changed the rules the week before.
Wow.
I know. And I'm so grateful, because you can only imagine how much harder it would have been doing that solo. I'm so glad I didn't have to do that. But anyway, so we go in for this 20-week scan, which was actually at 20 weeks exactly. So I woke up that morning with the app telling me you're halfway through, you know, your baby's hands are this big, your baby's the size of this fruit. And I screenshotted those because I was like, we're halfway. And we were trying not to find out fetal sex, but I also kind of wanted to know. So like, that's what I was thinking that day is, you know, like, we're going to go into this ultrasound and like, maybe we'll find out. And then the ultrasound itself was just really, really awkward. But I've heard that ultrasounds can be awkward before. Like, you don't really know exactly what it is, right? It's like your first time ever doing this type of appointment, and you don't really know how interactive are they? How talkative are they? How much do I just lay here in silence? I don't know. Are they supposed to be 30 minutes? Are they supposed to be 2 hours? Like, you just don't really know. But at some point, it just got really quiet and really awkward. And then she said, oh, I'm going to go and bring the doctor in. And I was like, okay, maybe that's weird, but maybe that's still normal. I don't know. And then the doctor came in and the whole energy just shifted. Like, he was really focused on something. And then he finally said, okay, we need to walk back across to my office. And I was like, oh no. And immediately just burst into tears because I knew something was coming. And it had not occurred to me at all whatsoever during my pregnancy at all that there might be issues. I just assumed everything was fine and dandy and wonderful. So we went across the hall and he had all the books open already and all the images up on his computer screen and stuff. So he was fully ready to have the conversation, which I appreciate. And I will never forget that appointment, but I will never forget the way he phrased things to us, which I think is so important. And he started off and he said, I have some really hard news to share and I'm going to just get to the point. This doesn't mean that I'm unfeeling or I'm callous. I want you to have the information as quickly as possible. So let's just get right into it. And I was like, I love you. I love you already. That's all I care about. I don't care about your feelings. I want to know. And he shared that our baby had a giant omphalocele, which is when the abdominal wall does not form. So baby's liver, stomach, and part of their small intestines were outside of their body in this like external sac. And our baby's omphalocele was so big, it was almost the size of baby's head. So when you're doing this ultrasound, and I had noticed this of like, it's kind of hard to tell where she is on the baby as she's scanning. Like, that's just a little awkward. And I don't feel like it should be that hard. And that's why, because our babies, like the whole middle part of their body didn't look like what you expect. And basically what had happened in a normal, healthy pregnancy during 8 to 10 weeks gestation, all of those internal body parts actually form inside of the umbilical cord. And then between 8 to 10 weeks gestation, they push back into the abdomen and ours just never pushed back. So it's basically like the umbilical cord that has formed this sac that now has these body parts in it. And it's one of those gray diagnoses. Like, it could be totally fine. Your baby could be born. You'd have to do a C-section because you can't push that through a birth canal. You deliver early for that exact same reason. Baby's guaranteed NICU time. They now do something called the paint and wait as opposed to surgery right away because you can't push all of that stuff back in because their abdomen didn't develop to be big enough because it didn't need to. So there's not space to push. So they basically like wrap the baby up and just wait until the baby's a year old when they actually have built a big enough space. And then you can move those things back in, stitch them up, do all of that stuff. So you need a modified car seat because you can't buckle a baby with an omphalocele into a 5-point harness. They will never do skin to skin the same way. They will not do tummy time the same way. You're looking at all of these developmental delays because of their inability to just exist in the world as a typical baby can. I remember just kind of letting that just all sit with me. And he basically, in this appointment, the doctor, again, this was so beautiful. And he said, if you choose to continue the pregnancy, here's what we will do. If you choose to terminate, here's what we will do. And that's it. It's a choice either way. And you should know the information and you should be able to make a choice either way, you should always be walking into it with as much information as you can, whether you choose to continue or terminate. And I just so appreciate that being so clearly laid out as like, that's the decision we have to make right now. And either way, we're choosing something. And I just like, that was so powerful. So we did choose to terminate.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. We did a ton of research. We first just kind of sat with it for a little bit. We came home and made all the phone calls to our family to tell them because everybody was knew our ultrasound was at 3 p.m. that day. They were all waiting for an update. Did you find out? Is it a boy or a girl?
They were just waiting to know the sex.
Just like send us pictures. You know, we want to see that cute button nose, like all of those things. So we then called and it was 7 phone calls because, you know, we called my mom and then separately my dad and then separately his parents and then separately our siblings. And it was just these conversations over and over and over again. And it just sucked. You're like, your heart is already breaking and now you have to go and break everybody else's heart around you. And it's like, oh, just nobody's expecting that, right? Nobody's expecting that. So it just, we got like pretty good at just kind of sharing like, okay, we're going to get straight to the point. Here's this. Okay. Now we're like processing. We're going to go call some other people and we'll like report back. But throughout the next week, we basically did a ton of Googling. We have sat with our feelings. We were able to do an amniocentesis the very next day. We had a genetic counselor call us and we chatted in detail about a lot of those things. And my background is actually in child development at a foundation of biology. So I like knew a lot of this stuff, but it was still so helpful having somebody else outside of my brain and outside of my emotions and experience help talk us through a lot of these things. One of the things that really sticks out to me is we also talked to a pediatric surgeon, like the surgeon we would have met with if we had chosen to continue the pregnancy. This is the person who would have operated on our baby. So before the appointment, my husband and I sat down together and said, okay, we're leaning towards terminating for a lot of these reasons. What does this expert have to tell us to change our minds? What is the information we need to hear from this to really believe that we can do this? And it was like, I want to know that she sees this all the time, that this is something she is really familiar with, so that I know they're going to like, it's a not necessarily routine, but they have the experience, they have all the tools, they like know really what to do. And I want to know that babies do really well, that they end pregnancy really well, that they tolerate the surgeries really well, that all of this, that like mom and baby are both really likely to do well after this, like all of these different things. And we ended the appointment with her and she couldn't say any of those things. And it was very clear, like, okay, she can't, you know, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
So you would think the best surgeons or good surgeons are in this area.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe we could have transferred her to Stanford or something like that, but we're within the Kaiser system. So we're talking about Kaiser Santa Clara, which is a really great hospital with really competent surgeons. And they see 2 to 3 giant emphyseals a year. That's not enough. That's not enough to feel like you're on top of your game. And again, maybe we could have considered transferring care. That's a whole other minefield that we'd have to figure out with insurance and like all of these other things of would it be covered and how much work is it and all of that. That's a whole other world to navigate. But just like...
Well, and then thinking, you know, would she even survive that?
Exactly. And that was the other thing.
Would she even survive the plane flight over to who knows where, Boston? Are we, you know, where we go? Where will we live? What?
Exactly. And like we live near the Bay Area. We're like an hour outside of it in the boonies. Anybody watching the video can see the giant redwood trees.
They're beautiful.
They are. They're beautiful. They're huge. They're tall. It's lovely. So now we're talking about like an hour commute to the actual hospitals every day when baby's in NICU and all of that time and effort and, you know, all of the other things that are spinning through your head where I am self-employed. I don't have health insurance for myself. So now my husband, because in our country, health insurance is tied to employment, he can now never leave his job because we need health insurance forever. And he hated his job. He wanted to leave. He was like actively interviewing at other places. And it's like, oh, you can't do that anymore. You have to stick with this job. You need to not get fired. You need to tolerate it. You need to not be miserable. And it's just like all of those nuances above and beyond how we feel about being pregnant, continuing this pregnancy, this particular baby, the actual challenges of this particular baby that we can handle. There's so many other layers just because of the way our society works that you just have to think about.
I have to take it into account, all of it.
Totally.
All of it. Yeah. I just posted on Instagram all of the reasons why you may need to terminate your wanted pregnancy. And some of them are finances and family relationships and infrastructure. Yeah. You know, will you be able to get, if a child has a certain condition, that means they need to go to this and this and this rehab and all the other things. Is that across the street or is it in the next state?
Totally. Yeah. And even if it's across the street, can I continue to run my own business while dealing with all of the medical appointments and everything else? And I have a lot of flexibility within my job because it's my own business, but I also don't want to sacrifice all of that and completely give it up. And would I be able to handle all of that? And if I had a regular 9-to-5 job, would I be able to maintain that with all of the medical appointments that go along with it? Probably not. So anyway, the really beautiful thing is that we both felt really comfortable with the decision. We were both leaning termination from the beginning. And that was not as challenging a conversation as it could have been because we were both on that same side. And to be very clear, we are both liberal. We live in California. It was reasonable thing to have done at the time. This is pre the fall of Roe and all of that. And also somebody very, very close to us was actually an abortionist for Planned Parenthood at the time. So like our families are tolerant of this idea. Like we didn't have to battle people. We didn't have to worry about our own personal beliefs in this. We didn't have to worry about that of our family. Like everybody rallied around us and was extremely supportive. And that makes a world of difference. Looking back, it was so hard for us to go through this emotionally, psychologically, even with a medical system that supports it in a state where this is allowed. The process itself was physically very easy to navigate, and a family system and a friend system that was incredibly supportive of the entire thing. And it still was the worst thing I've ever done. And it absolutely broke me. And I had so much support through all of this and was treated like a regular human, having a regular medical procedure like I was. Whenever I read other people's stories, that most of them are so much harder than this in so many ways because they lack the systemic or the familial or the community support. And it just breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's hard enough as it is without all of the political, religious layers heaped on top.
Absolutely. And it's never a decision that's made lightly. And I think that's something that the political and religious spectrum often gloss over, is like the decision-making process that has gone into it. Like, it's not like you just wake up one day and you're like, you know what, this sucks, I'm going to just go ahead with it. Like, that's never what happens. And certainly not in a lot of the TFMR stories, right? Like, this was what I had been working for my entire life and looking forward to my entire life. And I don't think I mentioned this earlier, I was 32. So I also was like, you know, I'm like on the slightly older side. I'm not in my 20s having kids, but I'm not 40. I'm not 50. I'm not high risk yet. It's not a geriatric pregnancy yet. You're not expecting those issues that you're at least like, I don't know if the data is still there for people over 35. I don't really believe that it is. I think the medical system has changed so much that, you know, our data is all wrong at this point. But at 32, you're certainly not expecting that sort of thing to happen. And it also was not age related. It was just a complete fluke.
How long did it take you to get the genetic results back and then find out it wasn't? Did you get the FISH results back first?
We got the amnio results back before we terminated, and the whole thing was 10 days. So we got the amnio results back within
really
a week.
Wow, that's really fast.
Yeah, they rushed them, and I am so grateful. And everything was fine. So it was not a chromosomal issue. And this is something else that I want to say too, is we kind of played out all of these things of like, okay, so if the surgery goes well and all of that, like our baby could be totally fine. If you have a giant omphalocele, is often just a giant omphalocele. If they have a small one, it's often linked to other genetic issues, which is interesting. It's one of those cases where like bigger is better in that sense, but you don't know until you do all of the tests, until baby's born, and then you find out. So a lot of it really is just wait and see. And as my husband and I were reading all of these quote unquote success stories of omphalocele babies, they didn't sound like successes to us. They were not what we wanted to be raising our child through. And that is knowing the omphalocele alone, let alone any of these other potentially compounding issues that we didn't know if baby had or not. So we were making our decision based on these physical abnormalities. And I want to say that also is our baby's issues. You could look at the ultrasound and see them. We didn't need to wait for testing to confirm that initial. The amniocentesis could have only showed us worse things or additional things rather.
And it was already bad enough what you were seeing.
Yes. What and everyone was very basing clear.
Their medical opinions off of.
Mm-hmm. There weren't, we couldn't say like, oh, but were the amnio results wrong? Or, you know, the test didn't come back. We're not really sure. It's inconclusive. Like you could see it, which again, I think makes the decision. For me, it feels like it made it easier because I didn't, there wasn't really much to question. It was like, I saw the pictures. You can see that that does not look like a normal pregnancy and a normal baby. And that baby is going to have some issues because of all of these other things. And it was just nice to, again, feel more secured in that decision. And I don't know, would I have felt the same if we'd had a diagnosis that was more based on specific test results or something? Would I question it more? How would I feel? I don't know, because that's not my experience.
Yeah. Every individual case, every baby is different. Every pregnancy, even, you know, a different pregnancy in the same body.
Totally.
You have to look at what's going on right here in this one with this mm-hmm. baby in our family right now.
At this time. Exactly.
With the information we have.
Exactly.
And even with all of that, there's still, you know, doubts and guilt and what ifs and.
Totally. Yeah. So for us, with the information we had and the diagnosis we had at that point in our lives, it was the right decision for us. Mm. And we have both very clearly felt that ever since. Also, we still feel that was the right decision. We miss our baby a lot. We always wonder like, what if, you know, what if she'd been born healthy? What if we could have gone through with it? What if all of these things? But, you know, that's not the situation we had. We didn't have a healthy baby. We didn't have a baby who likely would have made it to term and be outside running around as a 3-year-old right now. That's not really the choice we were given.
And within the healthcare system that you were in, did you have the termination at a hospital nearby? How did that end up working out?
Yeah. So I chose to do a surgical procedure as opposed to labor and delivery. And I knew that that was right for me. I personally didn't want to labor and deliver a baby I knew I wasn't bringing home. And also, again, remember my baby's issues are physical and I didn't want that to be what I remembered of them. So that really led my decision. So I chose to do a surgical procedure. And it also, this is looking back, this is very much part of the grieving process and that kind of denial stage, I think. But for me, it felt like, and I don't mean this in a callous way, it was a problem to be solved. Like this pregnancy is no longer healthy. We're going to stop this one. We're going to get my body healthy and we're going to get pregnant again. That's exactly what we're going to do. So I was like, let's get it done as quickly as possible. Let's get through this. Let's get healing. Let's move on. And of course, that's very much that those like denial grieving kind of things, like you can't solve problems that way. And a pregnancy loss is not a problem to be solved in that way, right? That's not how it works. And I can look back at that now, 3 years later, and realize that. But in the moment, that's very much what it felt like. It's like, all right, let's check the boxes. Let's move on. So I had it done as a surgical procedure, which is a 2-day process. I went in on the first day. And this is just, I just went into an OB office at the hospital center. So I didn't have to search out an abortion clinic particularly. Nothing about this was abnormal from any regular medical procedure. So I went in and I met the OB who would be doing the procedure the next day. She inserted laminaria up into my cervix, which helps start dilation. And that part was painful, but it's like very short, like 2 minutes or something. So it's uncomfortable, but it's kind of like having a pap smear or something like that, where you're like, oh, that's not really comfortable. Okay, great. And I got to ask her all sorts of questions. And my sister was there, who also asked a lot of questions, which is really fantastic. And then we went home. And basically that day was just kind of a like, you'll be cramping and uncomfortable. And my sister, as I said, was there. My sister-in-law lives in town with me and she came over that day and the two of them were just magical. Like they were like, what do you want to do today? And I was like, you know what? I want to dye my hair. I want to go full rainbow colors, as many colors as we can get in my hair. I want to watch Moana. I want it to be really loud and I want to eat all the chocolate that I can. And that's what we did. We bleached the crap out of my hair. We put rainbow colors in. It was like beautiful mermaid hair. And I had heating pads on. I took painkillers. And it was just like, we danced around to Moana. And it was like one of, in this like incredibly traumatic time in my life, it was so beautiful. And looking back, like that week was actually one of my favorite weeks because I was so supported. I was so held. And I mean, it's just, it's like so meaningful looking back at that, being like, they dropped everything to be there for me. And like, what do you need? And I was like, I need to scream Disney songs at the top of my lungs while crying hysterically. And they were like, we got you. We got you. Let's do that. That sounds great. And my sister-in-law that day had also showed up with everything that you might need for this. So she was like, I've got diapers. I've got adult diapers for you. I've got pads. I've got bra pads. I've got ice packs. I've got this. I have ibuprofen and Tylenol. I have like everything you might need for a termination. And it was like, she'd done a lot of Googling. One of my friends had kind of given her some information and it was just beautiful. Like I didn't have to go out and buy any of that. She already had it there. So day two, I woke up early. I took misoprostol on the drive in and that kicked off, you know, the cramping and the like basically labor effectively to like really dilate. And that was very effective for me. So I was in a lot of pain by the time we actually got there. And it was at the surgical outpatient center of my local hospital. There were not protesters I had to walk past. Nobody knew what I was doing. I was just going in for, you know, something. And I walked in and yeah, then I went through, they like took me into the back and I was put under for the procedure with just a, you know, like a face mask for anesthetics, I guess. And I remember being wheeled back into the room and they, you know, is this your name? Is this your date of birth? Are you here for a second trimester termination of pregnancy? Yeah, but I don't want to be. But yes, but no, but yes, yes, that's why I'm here. And I just remember that so clearly of like, I know that you need to clear that with me because I'm not here for a knee surgery and nobody needs to be messing that up. But also like, man, can we not talk about it a lot more? So, and then I woke up not pregnant in the recovery room. And it was like, that was it. And I asked for extra painkillers. Like extra dose me up on narcotics before I go home because this is not pain I need to be dealing with. I don't know if I will be in pain later, but I do not want to be. And they were very gracious about that as well. And then it was the physical recovery was a lot easier than I thought it was initially because they go in and they actually scrape everything out. There really wasn't much bleeding or anything. And there was nothing left in my uterus to come out really. So it was like minor bleeding. And I was a little crampy and uncomfortable, but not really worse than like a regular period. I just wore lots of heating pads and I preventatively took I alternated Tylenol and ibuprofen, you know, as much as I could for that first couple of days. Cause I was like, I don't even want to know if I'm in pain, but I don't need to deal with that. And I would say within a couple of days, I felt much more normal. And I think the biggest adjustment was my uterus shrinking back down and my body, like, you know, just all of it kind of adjusting back to not being pregnant also. It was a very weird feeling.
Thanks for sharing all of that with us.
Yeah.
I know it's not easy to think back and remember when you had to confirm, yes, this is a termination.
Yeah.
And the pain, the emotional pain, the physical pain.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by our upcoming TFMR Grief and Healing Retreat. This year, we want to run this retreat annually. We will be in the beautiful high mountain area of Mexico in Tepoztlan, a small town near Mexico City. We're getting together soon on April 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th of 2024. So that's Thursday through Sunday of that weekend. And this retreat is for TFMR parents only. It will be co-run by me, Sabrina, the TFMR doula, and Kate Carson, who is a baby loss and intimacy coach. And we both have lived experience with this type of baby loss. So come for somatic meditations, grief circles, a traditional sweat lodge experience, and hot weather and yummy food. You can find out more at the tfmrdoula.com/tfmr-retreat. And that will be in the description here as well. We may do a free hybrid online portion of this retreat, so sign up for more info at this link. And now back to this episode of Our TFMR Stories. And I know that you wanted to share your story about trying to conceive after, and how was that related to your physical healing from this birth and then leading into, I don't know, the emotional healing through the grief journey and then
Did you try to conceive right away? Some people, like, they go right into it. Some people need more time. Some people feel like they don't have time because they're already 38 or whatever age, you know, they, how was that for you?
We went right into it. And that was because I was just kind of checking those boxes of like, this is a problem to be solved. Like, I want to be pregnant. That one didn't work. Let's do it again right away. Let's as quickly. And I will say I joined a bunch of online TFMR support groups, which was both a blessing and a curse. It was amazing to have other people who had been through experiences like this. And I, when I joined, there were a bunch of people who had had terminations within like a couple months of me. And then I was, you know, pretty quickly watching them get pregnant again. And that was not my experience. I was really, really struggling with it. And it was so infuriating watching it happen for other people, specifically within the TFMR. It's one thing, like, of course I hate everybody who gets pregnant easily without experiencing yeah. pregnancy loss, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, of course. Of yeah. course I'm angry and jealous.
That comes with the territory.
Exactly. Right. But these people have been through you the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, their body has to physically recover too. And why is it so much easier for them? Mm. So I was having some really wonky, I ended up having retained tissue. So 8 weeks after the TFMR, I actually went in and had a second DNC.
Oh no, how awful.
Yeah. And again, I was like, okay, I'll be recovered in like 4 to 6 weeks. I'll be back to cycling. I'm going to track my cycles really carefully. Also looking back, turns out I'm like slightly, I'm not like diagnosed OCD, but I'm like, I'm a very type A person with these things. So I'm like, I'm going to be tracking. I'm going to know exactly all of these things. And I was like, I'm not ovulating. And like, I'm having some really weird bleeding issues. Like I would not bleed at all and I'd be fine for like a week or two. And then I would go for like a 4 mile hike and then just gush. And I was like, this is really weird. And there was one day I was visiting my brother and sister-in-law and I could feel it coming. I stood up from the table and ran to the bathroom and I literally dripped blood the whole way down their hallway to the bathroom. And I was like, I'm calling my doctor because it's not okay. This is not a regular period. This is something weird is going on. So I went in and had an ultrasound and she said, yep, there's some extra tissue there. We can schedule you for a DNC, but we're scheduling out like a couple of months at this point. So do you want me to get you on our books? And I was like,
no, now. This is an emergency.
And I was like, it has already been 7 weeks. What do you mean? I might have to wait another like couple of months. Also, how is that okay for my body?
I think I remember you posted about this in our group too.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, ask them to get you in now. You know?
So what I did is she was like, you know what? I can prescribe you Misoprostol and you can try this at home. And I was like, done. Because there's no harm in doing that while I'm waiting for you to schedule me in a month. So I took the Miso, and actually this is a kind of beautiful thing. And also hashtag healthcare hack. The Misoprostol, it was so uncomfortable. Like I ended up basically in labor and it was so painful that my husband was like, we're going to the ER. You know what they do in the ER? DNCs. So I got what I needed for the minimal, like, again, thank goodness for good health insurance. And all I had to pay was the like $200 health ER cost or whatever. And I got my free DNC that I needed.
I hate that that's like a medical hack is right? actually using the system the way it should be used.
Yes. And like during COVID, how miraculously the ER was
USA,
not full.
USA, what are you doing? What right? are you doing?
Yeah. And I mean, this is another thing that makes me feel a little bit happy and is just totally messed up. Like the bill that we got for that, which again, my insurance covered because it's amazing, was like tens of thousands of dollars for this ER trip and this emergency DNC that I had. And I only paid the ER bill for it. And part of me is like, ha. To you, insurance, for having such a broken system that this is how I needed to get the care. And like, at least you're paying for it. But like, that's so broken, right? That's not how it should go. But I got the care that I needed within like a few days of knowing that I had this retained tissue. So I ended up having that second DNC just in the ER. And then I actually went back to normal. And our doctor had told us, like, you can start trying again right away, but we recommend that you wait one cycle just so that your body has time to recover. And I understand that. I also know that it's also kind of just because then it's easier to date a pregnancy when you know what a cycle is doing. So I'm like, do they really need you to wait a month? Is that just so it's easier on their end? I don't know. But we waited a month and I had a beautiful 28-day cycle, which I never have. My cycles are always 5 weeks. So this was like perfect. I was like, oh my God, I'm fixed. I'm totally normal. I'm more normal than I was before all of this. This is beautiful. And then my next cycle was 6 weeks. And then my next cycle was 8 weeks and ovulatory. I didn't ovulate at all. And my husband and I are trying to get pregnant. That is a lot of scheduled sex. Like, we're just every other day for a long time. And I was like, when am I going to ovulate? When am I going to? So then I finally reached out to my personal OB, not the one who'd been dealing with the termination, but the one I'd been dealing with beforehand with the pregnancy. And I was using the Mira fertility tracker to track my cycles. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was a godsend for me. It's stupid expensive, but it's a P test that gives you actual hormone readings. So instead of being like, is this line darker than that other line? I'm not really sure. It's like your estrogen levels today are 2.8. And then when you ovulate, they're like through the roof. It's a huge difference. You're at like a one or a two, and then you're at 25. It's very clear. So I was able to show my doctor screenshots of this graph in the app that shows that I ovulated that first 4 week cycle. I ovulated that 6 week cycle, and here we are 8 weeks in, nothing's happening. And it was so nice to be like, this is not me misinterpreting some lines on a pee stick. This is very clear.
Oh, so yeah, because like, they love to second guess you and your own knowledge of your body. But if totally. You have numbers.
Exactly. And I love numbers.
Here's the science.
So for me, this worked really, really well.
I hadn't heard of that. They're sticks, but then
yeah,
it's an app.
It's this little like egg-shaped reader and these little fancy pee sticks that you pee on. Well, I guess you pee in a cup and you put them in. And so it's like a at-home COVID test sort of thing almost, but it's just like a little fancier. And it's expensive. It's like a couple hundred dollars, and you know, each of the pee sticks is like a dollar or something. So if you do this for months on end, like it really does add up. But again, for me, I was like, I need to be pregnant right away for my mental health. This is an expense that I need to be doing. This is going to help me. And I do think, like, I don't know if my doctor would have believed me if I hadn't had that data behind me. I really don't know. I think that she's a very understanding person. I like to believe that she would have believed me, but I really don't know, because I was able to go and say like, hey, I have this data from my home stuff that's like pretty reasonable. So she got me in for testing. She prescribed medroxyprogesterone, which is something that kicks off a period, and then letrozole, which is what kicks off ovulation. So letrozole and Clomid are like the two drugs that people take if they need help ovulating. Clomid tends to result in more multiple pregnancies. Letrozole does not. So I was like, let's do that one, because I don't really need to end up with triplets after all of this. That's like too many babies at once. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And then after being in the TFMR community, you realize multiples, pregnancies, you know.
Even riskier. I don't need that.
A big risk. There are a lot of people who need to have a TFMR for one or the other twin or multiples or.
Yeah. And I'm already going to be high risk for this next pregnancy because of my history. And I don't need it to be like even riskier because of the pregnancy itself, not just my history. So we decided to go ahead with letrozole. And I started that in, I want to say, December of 2021. And it worked really well for my body. So I ended up ovulating, like it probably was like a 30-day cycle or something. And so I think we probably missed the window on trying, because I ovulated sooner than I was expecting to. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay, that actually worked. I just wasn't really expecting it to work. And I had also done some fertility acupuncture. Like at this point, I was like, I will do whatever, because my termination was in May. My second DNC was in July. My first beautiful cycle was August. September, I had that weird cycle. October, November, and into December was that next cycle. So I haven't even cycled that many times, but it has already been 7 months from the termination with nothing happening. And I was just feeling so desperate. And I'm watching all of these people in my other TFMR groups fall pregnant again. And I'm like, I need this to happen. And I was spiraling mentally, and I was really struggling, and I was in therapy. But I finally was like, you know what? I think I need some medication help. And I started on Zoloft right around Thanksgiving also. So, and I don't know exactly if it was just the combination of all of these things or a little bit relaxing because of the medication or whatever, but Zoloft, letrozole, fertility acupuncture, starting to take some vitamins. The acupuncturist was like, you should probably be on magnesium and vitamin D. So I started those. And then
those
got
are good
pregnant.
For mood too. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Like, it's not bad to take, certainly.
Oh, but can we talk about the time thing?
Yes.
How, you know, from the outside, maybe someone who hasn't gone through this, they're like, oh, what's the big deal? Just try again. But that timeline, it's even longer than that. So there are those seven months when all those things were happening. And then even the time when you found out something was wrong with your baby. And then the time before that, while you are pregnant and you're expecting to, what, when your due date would have been September of that year. September. And then even before that, you know, there's the gestation period. And then even before that, you know, trying to conceive if it's
the first time around.
Even before that, you know, you may need to get your IUD out. Maybe you have to coordinate that with like work schedules or life schedules or other circumstances. You know, it's been like a year and a half and you're not even pregnant again.
Yeah.
The time adds up.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was.
And December. Then you hear stories about people who are like struggling for years too. And
then you hear people who like get pregnant the first month they tried or even not trying and they do. And you're like, why is it so easy for some people? And like, I knew I have friends who struggle with fertility. So I went into this knowing like, this isn't necessarily guaranteed. Like it takes couples often 6 to 12 months to conceive.
And that's without any extra.
What I'm not expecting is 6 months to conceive, a 5 month pregnancy, 8 months of recovery, and then another full pregnancy on top of, like you said, the getting the IUD out, all of that. Like it was December 2019 when my husband and I decided that middle of 2020, we were going to start trying.
2019. So it was
2019. So it was February, right before COVID hit, February when I got my IUD out. Thank God I got it out in February because I wouldn't have been able to if we'd waited until March or April or whatever, right? Like all those appointments were gone. So I got it out right before COVID. And then COVID hit and we were like, you know what? We want to start trying. So we started trying in July of 2020. And then the pregnancy, it took 6 months to get pregnant because my cycles are long. So it was only five cycles, but it was 6 months. And like, you're waiting. You're always waiting. You're waiting to get your period. Okay, I got my period. That restarts the month. Okay, now I'm going to start testing. I'm waiting to get those peaks. Okay, now we're going to start trying. Okay, now I have to wait 2 weeks to see if we got pregnant. Okay, no, my period is here. Now I'm mad that we're not pregnant. And I personally, I don't PMS well. It does not go well for my brain. I am extremely hormonal, extremely angry, extremely emotional. So I'm dealing with all of my regular hormonal swings on top of the anger at not being pregnant and the disappointment and the sadness. And then you are waiting for your period to end, waiting for that ovulation peak, waiting again. And then you do that and you finally get the line and you're like, it was all worth it. It was all worth it. That was so easy. That's how I felt at least. And I remember being like, whoa, 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 Robin, don't do that to yourself. That was not easy. And then you go through that whole pregnancy. Yeah,
it's okay to validate how hard that time period was. Even if other people have it worse, even if this went well for you, even if you were able to get good medical care, even if you were able to find the root possibly and get it fixed, it's still hard.
It's so hard. Yeah.
And it's so long. So you did get pregnant again, but then now you're in a pregnancy after loss.
Exactly. And you're like, everybody... Like, I remember my mom being like, I would say something about like, if this baby comes home, and she was like, when? And I was like, you can't say that to me. And I was like, I know that you're trying to be hopeful, but you can't. We need to find a way where you could be hopeful without dismissing my previous experience, right? Like, I need to say if, because I have been pregnant two times in my life and one of them did not work out. That's a lot. Like, that's a lot. And it's just so hard to, like, I'm a very, very optimistic person. So I did, like, I was definitely anxious during this pregnancy. I was really angry during my rainbow pregnancy. Weeks, I think 6 to 10, where you'd like, just like generally feel like crap. Also, I was so angry because I was like, I am 40 weeks is light years away. It's so far to get from week 6 to week 40. And I did this already. And didn't get there. Like I have done
that first feeling, trimester that nausea. Feeling. That yes. feeling. Yeah. I remember having that feeling in my pregnancy after loss too. It's like, I already did this. Why do I have to go through this again? I went through the hard stuff and it was really hard. Yeah. But now I have to do it again.
Yeah. And my pregnancies are not that bad. Like I did never throw up. I was just like generally queasy and uncomfortable. And still, I was so angry about it. Like, I can only imagine if I'd had, you know, if I'd actually been puking every day, or, you know, if I'd actually really had hard pregnancies, that I would be even angrier about it. And again, I work for myself from home. I can go and take a nap at 3 p.m. every day. I can go for walks in the morning when I need to. Like, I can work around a lot of these things. I have a great lifestyle for being pregnant and tired. And it's still, I was so angry. And actually, I think it's still just sitting right here, hopefully. This is something that I found really helpful. Somebody posted it in a group somewhere. And if you want, I can actually send you this document and you can share it too. But I created a coloring page for myself. So for the people who are listening to the podcast and not seeing this, it is a big giant heart with lots of rainbows inside. And each rainbow is made up of like three pieces. And there's actually, I think, only 39 pieces to actually color here, but I figured by week 40, I would be too tired and too pregnant to be like coloring. But the idea was that I colored
in
one section of rainbow
arch
every week.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh, yeah. So there are rainbows.
Yep.
Each rainbow signifies a week.
Exactly. And it is not complete because my rainbow baby was born at 38 weeks. So I didn't actually get to the last couple there intentionally. I didn't go back and fill them in because his pregnancy was not all the way to the end. But that was really helpful to me.
Mine would have had extra hearts on the outside. I almost went to 42 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
Crazy. But that on top of it being a pregnancy after loss.
Yeah.
You know, it's like something's going to go wrong. This is wrong. This is bad.
Yeah, it's wild. So it was really helpful to be able to like color something in and be able to really visually see the progress. And not necessarily from like week 6 to 7, right? Because like one actual heart, all you can see is so much extra white on there in the beginning. But looking like a couple weeks go by and you're like, ooh, that's looking a little more full. And then a couple more weeks go by and you're like, oh my God, are we like almost halfway? Like, I'm a very visual person. And that was a really, really helpful way for me to experience that pregnancy and like help the time go by in a way that didn't feel quite so long. Another thing that was really helpful for me in particular, I roped in my family right away and I was like, hey, everybody, I really love tracking my pregnancy and I need help tracking my pregnancy, but I cannot have the same app telling me that my baby is the same exact size that last baby was, especially because I don't know if you caught this, but I got pregnant in January both times. And so my rainbow pregnancy, our due dates were 3 days apart. So I am 1 year later doing the exact same timeline.
Wow. So you're even like 6 weeks in and it's Valentine's Day. You're even
exactly
like 5 weeks in and it's like summertime.
Yeah, they call the schedule the ultrasound and they're like, how's May 11th? And I'm like, that is the worst day of my life. Don't you dare put a medical appointment on May 11th.
Wow.
Like any other day, you know, like, no, I will not do that. But it has to be before May 21st, which is when we terminated. And I would like to know that this baby is healthy before I deal with the first anniversary of that baby's termination. Just all of those things. So it was so close. So I told my family, I was like, I need help knowing that this pregnancy is different. And they did a fabulous job. So every week I would get, my sister rallied everybody together, siblings, parents, everybody. And I got an email from somebody in my family every week with how big our baby was at that time related to something in their lives. So my sister has kids. So it would be like, your baby's the size of this Lego block that your nephew was playing with today. Or like, your niece just learned how to do this and your baby is the size of this week. And, you know, my mom really loves gardening. So at first your baby's the size of like a tomato seed and then your baby's the size of like this seed packet or like this seedling that I have or whatever it was. And it was just so nice because it was another good way to honor the baby's growth and the timeline without it being that same app telling me that same piece of fruit or that same weird forest animal or whatever, or French pastry, you know, whatever you're doing, that is just the same exact thing again. So it was really helpful. And just that community support, like we are all in this together. Everybody is helping me along. And that was really beautiful. Yeah.
At that point, did we have monthly pregnancy after loss and trying to conceive threads too in the group?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Yeah. You were able to take advantage.
Yes.
You were able to
watch other people go through it too.
You were able to take advantage of that.
Yeah. And it's such a simple thing that again is so helpful. Like I need other people who have been through the same experience. Like there are other pregnancy groups you can be a part of that I love. I think that there's a ton of value in all of these different groups, pregnancy loss groups and pregnancy after loss groups. But TFMR is such a specific type of pregnancy loss. And I had so much agency over my loss because of that. Like, it was a decision that I got to make, which is so beautiful in some ways and so heartbreaking in others, right? It's like, I will say is really helpful. A couple of our close family members, when we first told them about the bad news, hey, we're considering terminating, two of our family members said, oh, I expect if you terminate, you would tell people that you miscarried. And I was like, oh, no. That is not what I will say. I don't care if you live in the Midwest and everybody around you is extremely anti-abortion. I will tell people exactly what happened. Because if we don't tell people for experiences that they can understand and relate to, like ours, this is how you end up with legislation like what we currently have. But even that aside, going into this subsequent pregnancy, I know that my body was carrying a pregnancy well. My body can do this. That pregnancy had issues separately from my ability to carry a pregnancy to term. If I miscarried, I wouldn't have that same trust in myself, right? Like I could see so many other layers of anxiety and worry going into a subsequent pregnancy of like, is the pregnancy healthy and can I do this? And for my rainbow pregnancy.
Yeah, it changes. I mean, it's a different psychological, emotional, physical experience.
With
if it's a termination for fetal health or if it's a miscarriage because you don't have enough progesterone levels or if it's a termination for your maternal health,
totally.
It's going to be different. All of those aspects play a role in how you're experiencing the next part of your fertility journey. So just say it's a miscarriage. No, that completely changes the way that people will even relate to me, you know, they'll be
exactly.
Like, oh, this pregnancy's, you can do it.
Yeah.
That's not helping. I know. I know I can do it. The problem was my body held on too hard to a baby that was sick.
Exactly. Yeah.
So don't tell me like you can do it. Like that is not helpful. And that did not help my last pregnancy either. So.
Exactly.
I get it. Yeah. I get it. And a lot of listeners will totally get it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And miscarriages oftentimes are so early in pregnancy. So if you're going to say that you miscarried, if that's the language you're using, everybody's going to be like, oh, you were barely pregnant. And it's like, I made it halfway.
Which is not helpful either.
Yeah. I had baby shower invitations. My in-laws had a flight out to come out for our baby shower. Like we were in it. Like we were, you know, like it just, it's, they still flew out at that same time. It was around my birthday. We still had a birthday party and I bawled my eyes out that morning because I was like, this shouldn't be a birthday party. I should be pregnant. This should be my baby shower. We should be celebrating that. And instead I'm going to go get extremely drunk because that's how I'm going to cope with this. And I shouldn't be drinking at all because I should be pregnant.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
trying to conceive after loss. The loss was hard. The loss was devastating. It was something I was not expecting. And the trying to conceive after loss, I didn't realize how much harder I could fall. I didn't know that I could go down lower than the loss. And that trying to conceive, it's just you're waiting. Like we've talked about this too. We're waiting and waiting and waiting, especially for me. Like, okay, we did the termination. I am waiting to be recovered so that we can try again. And now I'm having this weird bleeding stuff. Now I'm waiting for that appointment with the doctor. Now I'm waiting for them to let me book a second DNC. Well, screw them. I found this back way. Ha, I hacked the medical system and got it done anyway. Now I'm waiting for my cycle work to return. Now I'm waiting for these extra long cycles. Now I'm waiting for my doctor's response again. Now I'm waiting for those meds to kick in. Now, and it's just like, you're just waiting. And when you're waiting, you can't do anything. There is nothing you can do when you're in that 2-week wait, except wait. And it's just awful. Like it is so hard. And anytime I'm out in the world now and I talk to people who are like, for some reason, people say this a lot to me now. I hear it a lot more where people are like, oh, we're going to try to have a kid in the next year or something like that. And I'm like, that was really hard for me. I wish you luck. I hope it goes well. If you find that that's really hard for you, here's my information. Because it's just like, I did not realize how hard trying to conceive, even the first time around. But then after loss, like it was so hard. And I just like the mental spirals that went along with it and the grief and the anger with my body. Like, why is my body not recovered? And people would be like, oh, you just went through a really traumatic experience. Your body needs to recover. I don't care that my body needs to recover. My brain needs to be recovered and pregnant again. Like this is, it felt like I was fighting my body in a way that it was so hard. Words can't even express how awful that year was and how hard it was. And then I got pregnant again and we made it through the rainbow pregnancy. And I now have an almost 18 month old and he is the light of my life and things are so much better. And I know I started off the call before we started recording by telling you, it feels like this bad dream. Like it was now almost three years ago. I don't know. It was years ago. I'm even losing track of time. How am I losing track of time about this like crazy experience that I had? And it's so hard to remember, like, no, that really happened. That was very real. And my rainbow baby is a rainbow baby because of this awful, awful experience that I went through. And I am mostly back. I am happy most of the days. I feel much more like my previous prior person that I was before all of this. It does kind of feel like this weird blip in my life, which is so weird. And it's like, and then I remember and I'm like, no, that really happened. Wow.
Yeah, it really happened.
Yeah.
I'd like to, was there anything else you'd like to add before I ask?
Nothing in particular.
Hey, I'd like to ask what you would share with someone who has gone through a TFMR and they're really grieving and maybe they're going through fertility challenges as well. What would you share with them?
Find a way to get it out of your head. Find a way to share. Whether that is, for me, journaling was really, really helpful. And I shared a lot of my experience out there in the world openly on social media because I wanted people to know what I was really going through. But even if I didn't want to share it, I would open the notes app on my phone and I would just write just for me. I am just writing and getting that out of my head and out of my body. I would write and I would bawl and I would just release the emotion so it wasn't just bottled up in me. Because when I kept it bottled up, I was exploding and I was not coping. I also was in a lot of TFMR support groups on Facebook. Postpartum.net has some beautiful pregnancy loss support groups. And they even launched a TFMR support group right around the time I had my termination. It was brand new. Like I went to that a couple of times. So being able to connect with people who really understood my experience in a way that other pregnant people just don't, if they haven't been through it. My husband didn't understand it because he wasn't physically pregnant and then physically going through the loss and then physically dealing with that. He's also an engineer, so his emotional brain is not tapped into quite the same way that mine is. And even like my sister was a wonderful support person, but she didn't get it the same way. So for me, it was so helpful to have, like, I had a therapist, which was great. And I had my TFMR support groups, which were great. And then I journaled. I really needed like an open place where I could just get out everything. And so it wasn't in me. And that's what I would say to people is just try not to hold it in because it is so hard. And actually related to that also, something that I found is when I started sharing my story with my close friends, I all of a sudden heard one of my friends was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I actually had two miscarriages between the two kids that we have. And I was like, I didn't know that. I thought we were close. And I had no idea that you had been through this experience, including like a missed miscarriage needing a DNC. I had no idea. And then that just kept happening. The more I shared my story, the more I heard from other people of like, oh my gosh, my best friend actually terminated for medical reasons last year. And I'm like, holy crap, this is not even a term I knew existed. What do you mean other people in my realm have gone through this too? It was really empowering. Like the more I share, the more I hear from people like, oh my gosh, this happened to me too. Or something similar, like I also struggle with these ways. I also had bad news at an ultrasound, all of that stuff. And it's just been so powerful and so connecting. And I know my friends so much better now. I think that there's a really beautiful side of it. It's a community that nobody ever wants to be a part of. And so many of us are.
Yeah.
So if you are comfortable and feel safe in an environment where you can kind of share your story a little bit, I personally have had a lot of success with that. And I kind of tested the waters with some safe people, and I found really good feedback from that. And I have now been sharing my story very openly, again, with really good feedback and support. And that has been life-changing for me.
Thank you so much for sharing those tips. That is so helpful to remember that there are ways to get it out, to let it come out. Yeah. And you can try lots of different things and figure out what works for you and which TFMR community or which trying to conceive fertility community feels good for you and which friends. And then you find out some of them have been through it too, and we just don't talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Robin. Thank you for sharing Ellie's story with us and for being here today. For all of you listening, please make sure to subscribe to either the YouTube channel or this podcast and like and review and do all the things, or send it to one of your TFMR friends or maybe your OBGYN so that they can get a sense of what we go through. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for creating a space for us to share these stories. I think that's so, so important and so powerful. So thank you.
Thank you.